Get ready to drop the puck, take a free throw, and step up to the plate. It's time for the Metro East Sports Podcast on lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome into the Metro East Sports Podcast. We have a very special edition, a Legends and Influencers series edition for you today. And we are joined by one of the greatest coaches ever in the Metro East area. 10 state championships, a Granite City Sports Hall of Famer, a Blackburn Hall of Famer, a St. Louis Sports Hall of Famer, and every year Blackburn awards the Gene Baker Award to a player who represents the team in a positive manner through sportsmanship, leadership, and competitiveness. Gene Baker is our guest today. Gene, how are you?
Oh, fine, thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. We talked a little bit about those accomplishments that you've had, just so impressive, and you have meant so much to this area. So we really, really appreciate you coming on with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Coach, it's great to see you. And I know your schedule is busy today with your family and everybody else. So thanks so much for being our first ever guest, our first ever legend. And I know I told you off air, but I mean it. You're the first person I called. And when I think of coaching legends in the Metro East, I think of you.
That's nice of you. You might be starting at the bottom, so it can only get better.
As anyone who knows Gene Baker, incredibly gracious and self-deprecating, although we know that you have an incredible list of accomplishments. And we want to get started here by just talking a little bit about your upbringing and how you got into the game of soccer. We know that your dad, Ed, was a big influence in becoming involved in the game of soccer. How did you grow to love the game?
I grew up in our St. Louis, St. Engelbert's Parish. Then, Middle Ages, we were primarily, it was a Catholic sport endeavor, and grew up playing there. St. Engelbert's was a very good sports parish next to some other good ones. As it all evolved in soccer, probably you go down to St. Matthew's, Craig Club, way back when they were the standouts, Holy Rosary, St. Engelbert, then St. Philip Neri, and maybe out into St. William's and others like that as the powerhouses evolved.
So give me an idea of where we're talking about in North County. Is that what
North City.
North City.
Right.
Oh, okay.
In the it would be in the Beaumont School District.
Gotcha.
Perfect. And we know that growing up, you mentioned, I saw in a few articles that I had read, your dad introducing you to the game of soccer, bringing you to some of these incredible matches that really gave you an appreciation for the game.
My dad would always kid him, but now my dad was a much, much, much better athlete than I. Bigger, stronger man, better man. He had great common sense athletically. He was a baseball player. He played in the Cardinal organization. Everybody would, as he would say, accuse him of being a real good soccer player, and he would say he never played the game. He didn't. but whatever I wanted to involve myself in, which in grade school I played a whole lot. I actually went away to school on a basketball scholarship initially, Rockhurst in Kansas City, a Jesuit school. I played a lot of baseball, and but my dad would support me on whatever that was. Now, my dad was a, he owned 19 different taverns, only one of them at a time. And he would build them up and sell them. If I have a strength that is inherited from my dad, is it was simply common sense to do things that are simple, logical, and work from there. One of the things that he would caution me of as he would come to all the games would say, don't overcoach. You know, and he always thought Whitey Herzog, who was a great coach, he always thought that Whitey overcoached, even though Whitey was a great player. When my dad was really ill, latter part of it, really the end of his life, and he was in the intensive care unit, and I knew that he could hear me, and he had all these things attached to him, and I said, You know what? So what do you think about Whitey, what he's doing? And all the machines would go beep, 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 beep. And then he'd look at me, wise guy, you know. But yeah, so I owe him, and my mother was great. I had great support. But St. Engelbert's was a really good a neighborhood in our St. Louis in which to grow up in sports.
So after St. Engelbert's, then the journey takes you to Rockhurst?
I went to CBC, played basketball for a great coach, D.C. Wilkett. And then soccer was played in the winter.
Hmm.
And otherwise, I'd have played both. I got great coaching, teaching from D.C. Wilkett. I can't say enough about him as a person, as a coach. He's deceased. D.C. was on the great Ed McCauley basketball teams. And I think that, see, I believe in, as a coach, as a soccer coach, I believe in an eclectic approach that I can learn from anybody. I can, as an English teacher, I can learn something about soccer by teaching English. I can become a better soccer coach and classroom person by working in the English classroom, but also getting involved with other people in other sports and have an open ear. And I think that that's helped.
And Gene, being a coach, it's something that you really don't ever stop the process of growing as a coach. I think that's a common misconception with people. They see coaches and they think, oh, well, that's their style. This is the way that they like to do things. But all of the great coaches that I've ever talked to, they tell me how much they are learning constantly, like you just mentioned, as their players are.
Right. I used to kid my players and tell them that I had coaching papal infallibility. I could never be wrong. And the idea, and they would say, well, you know, are you a big head? What's the ego trip on this? No, I said, because if it doesn't work, it's gone. And then we go on from there. Can't miss. But yeah, coaching for me was great, fun. I was in it for the love of the sport, sports itself, and the kids.
10 championships.
9 of which I had.
Okay.
First one at Granite was John Sulmeyer.
Okay. So you coached for 9 championships.
Yes.
How much of it was your attitude with the players and the love of the game, and how much of it was the talent, or was it just a perfect storm of a combination of all those things?
Well, you can't have this kind of success without very good players. I had very good players from very good families. I feel very, very fortunate. We get along well, and I can't say enough about the kind of support that I was given then and that I'm still even given at that St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame. You know, we had 10 tables. Our guys show up for everything like that, and it unrequested, and it's just really... I couldn't be more grateful for what I've been through because of that. Even way back when I went into St. Louis Youth Hall of Fame, the parents who were younger then, some of them are gone, and they would show up. It was great.
One of those families was the Mendoza family, and I know that they have meant so much to the community of Granite City. What did they mean to you in your start at Granite City?
Well, the actual truth that nobody knew for quite some time is Ruben did affect my coming to Granite from Riverview. I started the program at Riverview Gardens. We had good teams and good players, and Ruben was refereeing a little bit at the time. So he would referee our games at different times. And he said, would you consider coming over to Granite? And that's when they were going to go into becoming two schools. And three of the male members of the Mendoza family played for me. One female, and they were great. You know, Ruben was a really great player and a really nice guy. You couldn't beat Ruben. As a youngster, my dad would take me to see good games, and the best team was Kutus by far, and Ruben was one of the standout players on an unbelievable team. They were really fun to watch.
So who else were you watching when you were a kid? If you were watching local soccer matches, who were some of those other teams that you were looking
at? We had some really good players in the St. Engelbert's program who went on to win national titles.
Collegiately or?
No, in club soccer. It was more of a parish thing then. Indeed, they were called St. Engelbert. Now, I played on a team that went to the national finals. I was playing basketball at CB, and in the other part of the season, I'd be playing soccer for what were called the Saints, and they were kind of a mixture of a number of different players. I kind of wish I was very happy with what I learned and what I got out of and enjoyed the people and the players. As far as other players, a guy named Jack Duker was a great player, played at St. Louis U way before me. He coached me for a time. His brother Tim, half-brother Tim McAuliffe, was a close friend of mine who I went to CBC with, and he played on the team at St. Louis U with me. Timmy was a very good player, but Jack Duker taught me other nice, common, basic things, good habits in soccer. He would be one of them there. A guy named Ed Scott took a strong interest in the development of the game in St. Engelbert. George Endler, great player, wound up at St. Louis U. A lot of others like that, the names. But most of them, other than, it was either the players from the Hill, there were many great ones there, Charlie Colombo, etc., but the players on that Kutus team.
How much pride do you take in the fact that this rich history that had kind of originated over on the Missouri side of the river, you helped bring that to the Illinois side, and now people understand the Metro East is a hotbed for soccer just as much as it is in the St. Louis area on the west side?
Yeah, I like to think that. You know, it's I just feel very much I'm very proud of being a part of it. Ruben Mendoza is the father of soccer in Granite City, and frankly, I think on the east side. I talked to his son Danny, who's a member of the Boxing Hall of Fame. I talked to Danny a week or so ago. He called, and we shoot the breeze. But David, Sam Mendoza, Leah, really fine family. But there are so many others. A lot of people forget, like, I had four brothers in the program, the Goldschmidts. They were unbelievable. Donnie Goldschmidt played at St. Louis U. Mark played at Indiana University. Ronnie went to Rockhurst, did great, but always wanted to do other things. And, like, he was always into horseback riding. He's got his own little ranch, that type of thing. And then David Goldschmidt may have been the most talented physically of the Goldschmidt boys, and I haven't seen him for some time, but I used to, and I really enjoyed having him a part of the program.
Tell us a little bit about the youth programs in Granite City that I know Ruben had a very large hand in, and how much that meant to the success of you being able to build such a powerhouse.
I was, my attitude was to mind my own business about all of that. I thought it was very important that they are involved, that the players are involved with the team. Didn't have to be the same team either. In fact, in some cases, it was better if it wasn't. And I just wanted to see that they don't get burned out, they're ready to come into the season with the right frame of mind, that they're physically fit. And one of the ways that we pushed that and found that out early was, you know, I had begun a tradition of having the season was kicked off with a midnight practice. And it was fun, but it was it was a learning experience, and they were, and also we charged, so it was a fundraiser. We would charge $1 apiece to get in. There was a heavy set man whose name I never knew. I didn't know the man, who used to show up for every practice that kicked off the year, and he would give at the table he'd give $100. Go in and watch the practice, and that was it. I don't know who that was, but little things like that. It was nice we could buy something for the team, but by having that practice, it would last. We would turn the lights on at exactly midnight. The practice would last exactly an hour and a half. If you would show up to the first practice, and it would be a test of your conditioning, if you showed up out of shape, you were embarrassed in front of your family and friends, girlfriend, etc. So you tended to come out in shape.
Let's talk about your practices at Granite City. What were the keys? What were the fundamentals? What were the building or planning blocks for your practices? How would you describe the typical soccer practice at Granite City under Gene Baker?
I think you teach what needs to be taught. You work on things that are fundamental for a time, but then you need to work on the keys, preparation. Preparation for the season, preparation for your standards. I would always tell the players to kick off the season, what are our goals? We don't want to lose a game. Is that silly? Yeah, but that's the way we go. After you lose one, don't lose anymore. And also preparation for individual teams, certain talent. I would ask them, who do you think, who would you like to beat? Well, we'd like to beat St. Louis U High, CBC, Chaminade, etc. Okay, well then let's name some of their players. Now, if they didn't know who those players were, don't expect to beat them. Don't have a standard that you're completely ignorant of, and that's sometimes dependent upon their off-season training. But it was our objective to see that they were to be informed. This is the kind of level that we want to acquire.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but it sounds like a lot of the scouting and understanding your opponents was on your players themselves, and then you took it upon yourself to really focus on the team in your practices when you had that time.
No, I was just using that reference as a tool for knowing the level of competition that you want to aspire to. Now, as far as I was a bugaboo on, and very few soccer coaches, by the way, in the greater St. Louis area would scout teams. We did all the time. It was part of, for me, as a former basketball player, it was part of your homework. It's an equalizer. You could come prepared. Our whole thing was be prepared in the classroom, be prepared on the field, be prepared in the practice, and the discipline of what we're doing in practice, that's what we're going to do in the game. Be it forcing a particular, not letting a certain player have the ball, possibly. Maybe trying to force the competition on a particular side of the field. Maybe it's playing at a certain pace because of the things that they do. But that was all part of, and we would keep a book on all of that. And I would tell the kids, just to have a nice positive thought in their mind, I would say, give us a week, we can beat anybody. So I said, well, if you notice, we'll space our schedule out for some better teams. So at least we're coming prepared. And I would really harp on a player or two or 10 that didn't do what we prepared to do.
What would be the trademark of the typical Gene Baker team during a competition? Was it they were always prepared, like you just said, or did they tend to be physical, technical?
One of the things that I felt that I found early in my first year at Granite City, we went to the state tournament. We had a good team. And Danny Goldschmidt, Keith Galing, great player. Mike Martinez, great athlete. Gary Hensey, Billy Hensey's brother. Billy was a great player. Gary, quite a player. Ted Yegas, number of players from that first team. But in observing the competition, I was disappointed that we came in third. We could have won it. I felt we needed to be more aggressive. Something that I had learned from a guy named A.B. Fitzgerald when I played at St. Louis U was the two-foot tackle. And I taught the two-foot tackle. And there are referees in the area who would say, that's dangerous and it's not allowed. It's not intended to be dangerous. It's intended to protect the player and win the ball. It's not intended to be in any way dangerous for the opposition. It could be if they tackle wrong. And so I wanted a team that would be aggressive. Our characteristics were being good, prepared and good on restarts, all of the restarts, not just penalty kicks, but post-game penalty kicks, corner kicks, indirect kicks, direct kicks, throw-ins. We had a trait for being very successful on throw-ins. All of that adds up as a weapon against the opposition. I believed in individual play. If you are good with the ball, handle it. If you're unsuccessful, don't. Real simple. But I could go on and on about that kind of thing.
Well, that's what we're here for, Coach.
Yeah.
We want to hear you go
on.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's incredibly entertaining.
I want to know your throw-in plays. I want to know all that stuff. I think that's fascinating.
We would I find it astounding that the national team does not have a guy who can wheel it into the penalty box. Now, there was a time when we've had a couple who did that. Some will say, well, is the guy who does that effective on the field? Well, he better be. He has to be, especially at that kind of level. But I would use a medicine ball for practice to increase, and they would get on their knees and throw the medicine ball. We had a bunch of them out there. Create strength. Some guys who are very strong couldn't throw the ball in very far. Because it does have some things to do with leverage, with flexibility. But we would have people who, let's see if you can throw it from the 18 over the goalpost. And on our field, can you throw it over the fence that sits behind the goalpost? And we had guys who could do that. And there were guys on the field. Johnny Prasma, one of many Prasmas who played for me. Johnny was a very good player, went to Huntsville, Alabama. John was a right back, an attacking back, who had good speed and could score and from back there. But he could throw it in. And it was, so people would say, how many times do you see in games where they throw it in simply to the player's feet and go from there and say, well, that's possession. We want that. Fine if you want to delay the game. I like the throw-in where turn the opposition, make the defender turn. He's got problems. Mm. And the long throw could cause that. And it was amazing at how many times we exploited that. One of my really good teams, great team, back in the 70s, 1977, we had a guy named Greg Feigl who played at Huntsville. Greg is about 6'4", 5", great on head balls. The reporter labeled him the forehead factory. I would set up all kinds of things to get him open.
Right.
And the throw into him, we scored quite often. I mean, but it was due to his abilities. And one of the things that I inherited from my dad is to use what you have. And how difficult is it to figure out, this guy's 6'5". He does do a good job with heading the ball. We're going to go to him. And now we had others on that, like I mentioned, Johnny Prasma. But I'll tell you what, like a guy like Mark Goldschmidt, played at Indiana, great player, great guy, great everything. Really muscular, very well built. Dad was a weightlifter, and all the kids were able to lift quite effectively. But Mark didn't throw the ball in very well. And that's typical. Maybe you're gripping too tight, whatever. And so what? With that, it involves other people. You get the other things that make other people become a very strong part of the team.
Did you ever get nervous night before a game, day of a game?
No. No, I enjoy it. The old approach to soccer from Europe is that, and that's why they tell you, you don't coach during the game. I'm an American coach. I coach during the game. Some may not like it. Referees, hey, you know, we don't want to hear that. But I sometimes paid the price for doing that. But in my mind, I was coaching. And
give me an example of what the referees would tell you not to do.
If they would think I'm questioning them because of the sound coming from the bench, they know it's supposed to be quiet over there. Well, that was an old European tradition. It's not here, and it's becoming less and less. They're starting to figure that out. Some of the habits, by the way, they would say, like from referee, from basketball, you're working the official to get your calls the way you want them. That's part of being in the game.
Now, you coach the boys, and you coach the girls.
Right. I came into that, even though the year, late 80s, I was asked to do that. And I wouldn't do it unless it was open. I didn't want them to fire the then coach. And the way it evolved, I did take the job because he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe in pushing like that. I don't think it's good for the game, the kids, or the person, unless somebody just not doesn't work at it.
Mm-hmm. Any differences?
Oh yeah, a great deal. And I used to get the Blackburn girls would say, "How come you don't coach us like you coach them?" And I said, "I can't. I can't do that to you." And you wouldn't take it, and you'd be all mad at me and pouting. So I felt that I learned as a teacher and coach. As I say, eclectic deal. You can learn from anybody. I thought I learned by coaching the girls. Different things that could be set up during the course of their games. I had some very good girl players. One of my girl players from Granite is an assistant principal in the Ladue School District. Beth Rapoff, very good player, very smart girl, very intelligent. She has a PhD. And we had a comical thing that happened. I knew her mother and father well, and she was a young player on the team and playing quite a bit as a young player. And typical of some, she was a little disgusted with, didn't want to do it my way. So I sat her, and her dad just thought it was hilarious. He said, I've never been able to do that. He says, but you notice she don't do that anymore because she loved to play. And the things that we would set out to do that she could see the preparation, she was a terrific player in the program along with her buddy Tammy Duco. I had some players from the high school who wound up at Blackburn with me. Annie McAteer, fine center back. Caitlin Nunn, goalie. There were many others that were tremendous. I don't want to skip.
You mentioned Blackburn. And so after Granite City, you don't take any time off. You go immediately into Blackburn, and you're there for 8 years?
Right.
And did you enjoy that experience as much?
Oh, yeah. Now, you know that Blackburn was only one of two or three schools in the country that had the mandatory work program. Everybody had a job on campus. You had to have it, though. It could really be a great teaching device and experience and great reference. I would be surprised how people would go on to do some unbelievable things. And just like what's happened in the Granite City tradition, male and female, and at the Blackburn tradition, male and female, we had a number of kids go on to teach the game and have been really successful. So many.
Were you ever tempted to leave Granite City sooner to go to the college?
Yeah,
ranks?
I was offered a job at Cleveland, also at Eastern, at Wright State, and actually a couple of others in there. But the job that I really wanted and didn't get was St. Louis U. And that very disappointing, but very lucky to be at a place like Granite. My retirement has been very rewarding, and I thank the administration and, like I said, the players and the parents of the Granite City kids have been unbelievable. I did meet many great kids at Blackburn that I stay close to. The coach there now, Robbie Steinkuhler, his assistant, Josh Oswald, very good players for me, great guys. See, Timmy Gould played for me, and Tim is he had been at Carlinville as a teacher, English teacher, and good player. But I did really well with players from the Highland School District. Mm-hmm. We were close to being very, very good at one time. One time I had surgery, otherwise I think we could have made it to the NCAA tournament. But it was very informative, great people, nice people at Blackburn College.
What about kids? You started your career in the 70s. Coached through the 80s and the 90s. You won a state championship in all three decades. During your time, did you see a change in kids?
Oh, yeah. The talent pool in Granite City, so many of them, of those players, moved to Edwardsville and such. There are a lot of good players, families, and the kids who have played successfully in the Edwardsville program and other places who had been a part of the Granite City tradition. Mm-hmm. There are things that have changed in Granite City that affect the soccer program. And we've had good coaches too, by the way.
No doubt some great coaches in there. And those players that you had, especially in the 70s, to win five consecutive state titles, unbelievable what you were able to accomplish then. What did that first state title mean?
Well, first of all, we thought, and other people thought, that once we get that first one, the door is really going to open, because one of my habits is, if you're as good as this guy and you're 3 years younger, you're playing. I learned that in basketball at CBC. Play the young ones.
Did you ever get any pushback from parents on that?
Oh, yeah.
How did you handle that?
Well, there was a time when this man came in to see me, who was a school board member, and said, "Coach, we think you're playing politics," which is a very insulting term, and they called it Granite City politics. "We feel that you're playing politics with the kids." And I said, "Well, you mean because your son's not playing?" Well, yeah, and because his son, those two people, both of their kids are in the school board. They're school board parents. And they're not starting. They do play. And I said, "By the way, they're really good kids. They're just not starting." "Yeah, but if the older ones should play." And I said, "Well, that's not the way I do it." And those rules are stated in the beginning. It brings about other success. I was going to tell you about, Mark Goldschmidt. When we were just starting, we would have won 6 state championships, except I refused to play Mark in the state tournament because he had a broken collarbone. And his dad, great people, mom, 3 brothers, they were all hard-nosed. "He'll play." "I'm not playing him." And we don't won that game because he was that kind of player. I mean, he was a midfielder who had an abundance of skill, but could score as well, play defense wherever you needed him. It was going to amount to a win. And so that was kind of a significant time in all of that. The 82 team was interesting because we weren't that physical, but they were all smart, good players. A guy like Billy Hensley. Billy's one of these guys who never had a bad game, never had a bad practice. He's the type of guy and that's what I would talk to the players about, is I don't want to ever hear, "I'm having a bad day, coach." Change it. You're still here. You know, do something about it now. And Bill, you could go to, we like to do things in the park in the summer. Go out and just play. My son, who was a very good player, would come over from McLaurin North with sometimes couple of his buddies maybe, and some others. Johnny Van Buskirk's dad was the tennis coach. He'd be at the park. And young John would be out there, who could play tennis too. And "John, you want to play?" Well, he was 10, 12 years old. I'd bring him in. He'd be playing with the young guys. But it was just fun. It was the idea of having something that, you know, for the kids.
You know why he was at the park? He was playing tennis with me.
Oh, right.
Big John was playing tennis with me. And Johnny would go over and play in that field right there.
Exactly. The
tennis courts, basketball court, and then that field.
Yep.
Because I was going to bring that up. Because I remember those days watching those guys do that.
Right.
You mentioned not being afraid to play those younger players. Well, to win 5 straight state titles, how do you motivate a group of such young people to stay hungry after they've reached that pinnacle of success already?
Well, first of all, they're going to have to have enough talent to make that go. And as far as you want them to feel confident, as I said, through game preparation, same thing again. We really enjoyed all of the state tournaments were played. All of them were in Chicago, except for a couple were at Illinois State. And we did so well for so long that it became interesting to the local high school teams that they thought, wouldn't it be better for us to go down there and play? Now, some of the advantages of it are you have your kids together. You can meet with them. Everything is controlled better.
Hmm. And I understand that there were some really large crowds that would follow you up to those title games in Chicago. What did those fans mean to your team in being able to accomplish those state titles?
I wouldn't even have brought this up, but what we did, we were playing in the final of a game, and we were hurt. And we were really prepared for the game, but we had serious injury. And I felt that we needed some type of motivation to get going and to maybe get into the game where some of the injuries, you can work them out. And so what I had them do is when they played the national anthem, and this really stymied the opposition, when played the national anthem, and usually they run to the coach, they turned and ran to the opposite, to the bench of the audience, and everybody shaking, half high five.
Wow.
And it was very effective. It was fun too, and the kids were so hyped. When I mean, I could feel the the stuff in them when they came over to me to say, "Let's go," and this is what we're gonna do. Good luck, guys. And I could feel the buzz, and it was from that thing.
What a great idea. Did you ever do it again or just that one time?
Oh, yeah, I did it again. Yeah, a couple times, yeah.
And back to kind of that community and what everyone that was a fan of your teams in Granite City, how much did it galvanize that entire community and how much did it end up becoming almost kind of a cult following? You talk about some of the kickoff midnight practices. I'm sure there had to be, just this huge following of everyone wanting to know what's going on with Gene Baker and his teams.
Yeah, and for instance, like I said, we had such great parents. I mentioned Goldschmidt's, Fernandez family, David Fernandez, most skillful player in the history of the program.
I was going to ask you that. That was going to be my prediction. That
incredibly skilled and a great guy. Ricky, his older brother, very good player, very good. Allstate, but... Chooch, their mother who's passed away, was a wonderful woman, and she got involved in the boosters. But she came to me and she says, "Gene, we're going to be doing this." And we had great following, like you're saying, the support. And do you want us to be just a soccer booster or an athletic booster? Now, it's really debatable as to whether I made the right decision or not. My choice then was, I said, let's make it overall sports. Now, you will be doing things for some teams whose parents aren't supporting them as much. So it's a really noble gesture, but sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't, because sometimes it was exploited by other programs. But boy, was she something else. Chuchi, Mary Fernandez, was a great lady. The Sheridan family, Matt David has just passed away a little bit ago and was a really fine player, great guy. Matt Sheridan, great player in the program, very,
he was a teammate of mine.
Yeah, great guy.
Yeah.
Very smart. Great student.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I would kid about. And Dee is still doing kicking and really a wonderful person, 92. They were terrific. And I could mention so many others, the Feigles, the Phelps, Chalkos, Chapko. Yeah.
Well, so you talked about the community galvanizing. I remember as a little kid being at a friend's house and his mom was listening to the state championship game on the radio. Huh. Marsha Watson was her name. And that's when I first realized what a big deal it was. And then I remember my dad was a teacher at North. And I remember going to watch North and South play soccer.
Right.
I mean, it was like the Super Bowl. And I also remember Dave, people talking about Dave Fernandez and almost his mythical skill level. You know, people in Granite City talk about Dave Fernandez's skill level like people in South America talk about Diego Maradona, right? The different things that this guy could do, and he can juggle a ball on his head and go up and down the field and on and on and on. So I'm really glad you mentioned his name.
27 times on his chest.
27 times up and down the field?
No.
Oh, just total 27.
Chest only.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
When he worked at the it was, trying to think who he worked for, but out at the Lindenwood soccer field, if you've ever been there, football at one time, wooden steps. I mean, there's probably, I don't know, 50, maybe, I don't know, more. Big incline. He'd juggle the ball on his feet, go up and back down. But he did a lot of incredible things with the ball. And our program, really, I was a big believer in, well, my son, very, really good. His skills with the ball and juggling, very good. I think it's a necessity, and it's a confidence builder, and it creates a situation where you always have touch. Now, through time and not playing enough, that has dwindled a little bit.
So North and South was like the Super Bowl. Tell us about some other rivalries that developed over the years that really were special for you.
Well, my target was always to get to the state tournament and win it, and for the players too. But places like New Trier East, a guy named Tony Shinto, very, very well-prepared coach with good players and always to be reckoned with. There were some others there. The Schurz team was very good one year. So we would, you know, aspire to get there. Now, my assistants, Mel Bunning, Dave Ames, to mention just a few, certainly Barry Grody through time, and there's some other, the younger ones are terrific. But Mel would say his voice gets louder as he gets to the tournament. And he gets, you can see that he's really enjoying it, and it's fun. And that was just kind of a natural thing for anybody to do.
How much soccer do you watch today?
I don't watch as much as I had at one time, and I've had some illness, and my schedule changes. You know, I try to get some degree of working out in. I've had different things, and I'm doing fine. I don't have any complaints. God's been really good to me. I've got wonderful kids. They're not kids anymore. My children, I have three, Jean, Barrett, and Bridget. I have six grandchildren and two great grandchildren. With this situation that we have today, It's really hurting all of that, be able to go see them. But my kids are adults, obviously. There are 50, 51, and 2 right now. And my son is in Boston. He's taught the game well to his daughter. He has a son, too, who's younger. But his daughter, Riley, was a very successful player this year at Mount Olive in North Carolina. He really did a good job teaching, and she's enjoyed it, and I'm really proud of that. Believe it or not, they're the only soccer players
in your
from
family.
All that. Yeah. Now my grandson, Evan, played football, good athlete. My grandson, Ryan, very bright, who was a pitcher, but he's had some dealings with his feet that really hurt him as a younger player. But my to go back to all my kids have been much more successful than I. My son is with an outfit called Vereem. What is he called? He's the vice president of Total Rewards. And it's composition, health benefit type thing. Really does great. Very proud of him. My daughter Barrett, who's 10 months younger, was a pretty good athlete, really. And my son Gene, by the way, played at McClure North, was All-State, and then went on to Wright State, did great, captain there. Barrett is in real estate, lives on the edge of Baldwin, really has done great, has two wonderful children with two grandchildren of her own. And my daughter Bridge, can't say enough about her. She's a workhorse. She's unbelievable with her family, and the boys. I really feel lucky to have them.
One last question for you before we let you go. You're going to sit down with any young coach, any sport, and you're going to say to this coach, look, this is what you got to remember before you start your career. This is what you got to know before you start your career. What are you going to tell that young coach?
Things like, you want to be called coach, or do you want to be, or do you want to coach? I really loved coaching. I think you earn through time the association with players to be called coach, but I wanted to coach to give them things that help them win games, to help them be successful. I'll add other parts of that. I think it's very important to stress academics. The players knew that I wanted to know the grades, and I wanted the grades to be good because I couldn't help them to go on to university, whatever, unless the grades were good. And so many of them were much better students than I. I mean, some of them were terrific students, and I couldn't have been prouder of that. One year, I think we had six of the top 10 on a boys' team academically. And so you wonder why I did well as a coach. I had pretty bright kids. Mm-hmm. But as far as what I would tell them, the key to coaching is working. Too many people come into programs and they're just really delighted and think it all falls in place. You've got to work through problems, and you have to enjoy working through problems and helping the players. One year, we had a year one year when you talked about those that are memorable. It was the only year in the history of the boys' Illinois State Tournament in which they had a different type of playoff system. So you were put in groups, a group of four, and you played out of it. So you could lose and still advance. We got upset. Mm. In this particular year, which was 1978, we got upset by Belleville, and we came back and beat the other two good teams and won the state, and they were really good. We went on to win the state tournament, and we played three games in the state finals. We won by scores of 1-0, 1-0, and 2-0. Hmm. And but the idea is you work at it. It's not you have to do your homework all the time. One of my friends said one time, sitting in the stands, that some of the coaches were there, and they said, "You got to give him credit; he does his homework." And I wish I'd have done more of that when I was in the classroom when I was younger. That would have been better too. You know, that maybe that one's so good. But I did enough.
Yeah. Gene, it's been an honor and a privilege to be able to get to do this interview with you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, Thank you.
Coach. Yeah, Coach, thank you so much for coming today. As a Granite City guy, you know, you're a legend. You were somebody that I always looked up to.
Yeah,
and so to sit down and hear these stories about the old days are just, and as a coach too, it means a lot to me to hear the things that you're saying. So
I could go on and on about the players. And well, I was going to mention one quick thing.
We're talking
about those players. In that particular year, when we got upset, we had a really good – I had a player on the team who hardly anybody would remember anymore named Jack Burnett. He was the center back on four state championship teams. He started at center back as a freshman, and he was a great student. He'd been 1-2 in his class most of the time. He went to Evansville, very good player. And good, great guy. But so I'm sitting down with him, a couple other guys, and kind of disappointed about this particular game. And Jack, in his own inimitable way, says, Coach, you just can't change people. And I said, why didn't you tell me this earlier? we'll do something about it. And it was one that was kind of the idea of having, you know, everything can be a learning experience. And, you know, you can learn from all different sports, all different places, people, all different ages too. By the way, the person to attend the most state tournaments in the history of Granite City soccer?
The person? I'm going to guess Jean Baker.
Dee Sheridan. See, the year before I was at Riverview. So
she went to the most.
She liked to remind me.
She went to the most games.
Yeah.
Well, this was so much fun. We may have to do a Jean Baker part two someday.
I think we will.
I think that if there's more stories in there that you want to get out, I'd love to hear them. So I loved all your advice. So
it sure seemed like there was still quite a bit left in the tank for Jean Baker. So thank you so much for joining us once again. For Dave Leip, I am Colin Surrey. Thank you everyone so much for tuning in. This has been the Legends and Influencers series of the Metro East Sports Podcast.
Thanks.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.